BRS Subcommittee, July 17, 2017.
Initially came here, we had review and approval of the agenda. Let me mention one of two things about the agenda. I think Mr. Patino, hello, is a new committee member.
Yes.
Wanted to have a presentation on Union Station. Changes that were being done there?
Not so much presentation, just to raise the question about
the question
how accessible it is once people get into the event.
Right. Okay. And also because of the time of the year and where we're approaching, a discussion should be done on fare adjustments that will be coming up, especially as we focus on recent budget decisions. So, in with the agenda and this voter item, just want to see, is there anybody who would like to indicate approval of this?
Felipe Lachelle, Washington, D.C. Urban Pride, Metro Access.
Jennifer Blake, Metro Access.
Pete Cheever, PE, Policy and Planning.
Jen Weber, MTM.
Carlton Brown, MTM.
Chris Legata.
Tim Robinson.
Don Scruggs, Metro Access.
Al Peterson, Metro Access.
Shemisha Baskerville, First Transit.
Conrad Marshall, Transdev.
Bob Walsh, Metro Access, Christopher.
All right, Mr. Allen. Sorry, Conrad, I'm not
quite all right. It's always good to know who's in the room that you're speaking to. And there's a presentation that's being brought up that I'll talk to because it has pretty pictures of buses, which I always like to share. But I'm here to talk about the beginning of our annual State of Good Operations public hearing process for Metrobus. Last week, I took two presentations to two of the board's committees, which will result in a single public hearing process with recommendations being prepared for the board to consider in November. Go ahead to the next slide. So what we're trying to do is to hold public hearings about bus service adjustments that make good business sense and are good things to do to take care of the health of the bus service. Go ahead. And so we go through regular evaluations of Metrobus, both formally through studies as well as informally through our own performance analysis and jurisdictional inquiries. Over the past 7 years, we've made 193 adjustments as a result of this process. $17 million worth of resources have been moved from lower performing lines to more crowded or poorer performing lines. But additionally, during these processes, we've coordinated investment of $17 million worth of new resources. And that's a key point in determining this year's process. We'll move to the next slide. The overall process is really focused at getting public input, in particular that of our riders, into making the decisions that we need to about which services to keep and which services to improve and which services to reduce. And we present a menu of options. Throughout this process, we've not started with a predetermined outcome, but are really looking for public input to help give context and guidance to the decisions that we need to make, because everything is a balance and a trade-off. There will be one compact public hearing at the end of this process. That is the approach that we've taken, I guess, for the last 3 years in terms of meeting the compact requirement. But there's a lot of outreach where we go directly on the buses, to the bus stations, to community meetings, to pass out information online and to committees like yours to explain what's going on. If we can move. So this is a list of all of the adjustments or changes that are considered budget neutral. And that's a critical philosophic distinction to make, because this does not require new resources coming to Metro, just using the resources we have. And these are intended to deal with late running buses, to deal with crowded buses, to try and seek new markets to increase ridership, and to address safety concerns or inputs that we have. And so each of these lines represent a story unto itself, but this is These are the things that will benefit riders. And on the next slide, as the balance in the budget process, we would be looking to reduce some services. And both the District of Columbia and Arlington County have asked us to look at different ways of providing service through their local operations, as well as reducing some service on lines that make a better match to Metro Rail for transfers, for example, or a route segment where a local service is redundant to a Metro bus service, and that would allow us to transfer the resource or to discontinue a low performing line in favor of improving something with and has more riders on a daily basis. Of these total 20 proposals, 12 are clearly beneficial to riders, 4 are neutral in their impact, and 4 from a Metrobus perspective would represent a detriment. And that's an important ratio to that 4 to 16 that reflects the intent that these, recognizing that there's always somebody that will be negatively impacted, our goal is to maximize the number of people that benefit from these changes. I mentioned earlier that a key distinction is with that prior list is that they don't require new resources to Metro. As you know, the general manager presented what he calls the Safe, Reliable, and Affordable program over the last couple of months to control the growth of subsidy for Metro as a whole in order to meet the needs of the jurisdictions. And so this year, all of the changes that would require new resources coming to Metro that would increase the base budget and have an implication on the amount of funding necessary to sustain the Metro bus and Metro rail and Metro access networks on into the next 6 years. He wanted to have the finance committee have a discussion about the impact. And so we prepared this slide that shows of a list of new service proposals, which could, if all of them were implemented to their maximum extent, have a benefit or an expense of $5.5 million, netting a $4.1 million subsidy. You can see that the subsidy requirement for regional services for the District, Maryland, and Virginia would be $1.8 million or $1.4 million, or a little under $1 million, respectively. That's new subsidy that has to be sustained on in the future, and we wanted to make sure that everyone was clear about that obligation because the decision was made. So this list reflects an initiative by the District of Columbia. The City Council has appropriated $2 million to make changes on 14th Street by introducing a Metro Extra 59, a limited stop service to 14th Street, which would have require then adjustments to the 52 and 54 routes that are already there, and would allow for a possible extension of the 52 route down to meet the needs of the new wharf development in Southwest. Details that we've worked out in a corridor study a few years ago. And relating to that, Route 74, which already goes down into that community, has a couple of significant development-related changes, one being the new soccer stadium that's being constructed and the other being the wharf. And so we had intended to have these items proposed last year, but didn't get a chance to have them on public hearing. This year, the first phase of the wharf is going to open in October. The new soccer stadium will open next year, so it's kind of critical that we get out and interact with the public. Additionally, the district would like to add midday service to the Metro Extra X9 operating on 8th Street, northeast to northwest. And so we're incorporating that. And lastly, as part of providing benefits around the city, the city council has already also appropriated money for improving services along Alabama Avenue Southeast. And we had identified a couple years ago that extending the UA to Congress Heights would be a really good and efficient way to provide better connectivity across Southeast and between the communities in Ward 8 and Ward 7. At the same time, Arlington County and Fairfax County have been collaborating on the study of service changes on Columbia Pike. We're currently doing a study with them to identify what the recommendations for implementation are, but we wanted to facilitate that process by including the Columbia Pike services of the 16A line and the 16G line and the 26A, do all possible adjustments. And then Alexandria had asked us to add additional 11 Y trips, which is Mount Vernon to D.C. After surviving Surge 13 last year, we've had almost a 20% increase in 11 Y riders where they decided they liked the bus. And so we want to make sure we give them enough capacity to accommodate them. And let's see, 1Y is an Arlington Boulevard service adjustment that's related to the 4A line proposal that was in the previous chart. And then lastly, 94, which is a Stanton Road line down in Southeast in Ward 8. And there's a proposal for the circulator to take, for us to switch and let the circulator operate that service. So that's the history of this list of new improvements. Sum total, none of them affect metro access service sum. This is all service changes within the existing metro bus service area. And moving on to the next slide, would not affect those services. So the timeline is that by November, our goal is to be back to the board and the committee with final recommendations. And then the first of those implementations would get implemented in December of 2017, and the rest would be implemented with the June changes in 2018. So then the board was requested, or the committees were requested last week to recommend to the board an approval of the public hearings. And so these two approvals will be combined into one docket and one process so that everybody can talk about all of them together because they're really related. And with that, we got recommendations from the board or the committees to go forward. And so next Thursday, a week from this coming Thursday, we'll present to the board for final concurrence. And then we'll start pushing out public information in August, and the public hearing should be sometime in the middle of September. And that's my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions.
Hi, I have a question on some Northern Virginia route changes. And it's more a question of how do you determine when you're going to redirect the bus from the Pentagon. Okay, now 7, 8, and 22 are being redirected from the Pentagon to Pentagon City. Why is that? Is the Pentagon bus station maxed out on capacity, or what?
Those are primarily changes for the weekend.
Okay.
And what we find is that on the weekend, since that entrance to the Pentagon is closed to the public, there's actually very little traffic that actually goes to the Pentagon. And so we're bringing people down Shirley Highway and dropping them off where they don't want to go. So one observation was, and we actually have to do this for the Marine Corps Marathon, the Army 10-miler, and other events, is we move over to Pentagon City, and when we do so, we got a lot of good comments from the public. So the intent is that we would drop them over to the Pentagon City, where they would be someplace where they would want to go. maybe we can generate some more ridership and also take advantage of connections to Metroway and some of the other services at that location.
My second question is, how do you determine for the Northern Virginia routes which ones will extend across into the district? I noticed the one why apparently is going to Longmont Plaza. It's a new route. How do you, why is that going into the district rather than terminate at PennDOT, for example?
In 1977, Virginia, when rail, when Blue Line extended to Roslyn National Airport, a decision was made to stop running buses across the river.
Oh, I remember.
As, I'm glad you do. I've only read about it. And so once the railroad filled up and started having capacity problems, this was about in the late 1990s, we started looking at restoring some of the cross-river connections. The first one was Columbia Pike. The next one was Lee Highway. The third one was Shirley Highway, the 7Y. And so we've just been working our way down on the highest ridership line with the most potential and working our way down the list of corridors to run across the river.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Crawford.
Thank you. one of the concerns that Council of Governments folks do in regards to transportation is appropriate representation of all the groups within the service area. And so I'm just curious as to what consideration went into the various diverse groups of people that are being served by these different bus lines.
Well, as part of the public participation plan, which supports the Title VI assessment that documents the impact on minority and on low-income riders, there is an assessment of who the riders are on each of these lines, and an outreach effort is designed to try and gain a credible participation by each of the representative categories or demographics. And that's why a lot of our effort has changed from being having a meeting, y'all come, to going out and standing at the bus stop. And literally everybody that gets on the bus gets the brochure. Or my staff will get on the bus and ride to the next bus stop and be talking at you the whole time that you're there. That makes sure that everybody that rides gets a chance to be aware of and then choose to participate in the process. Recognizing that that's not the entire interest community for a particular line, we also work closely with the local jurisdictions and politicians to have them also echo the message and make people aware that now is the time to speak up. And the last thing we've been doing is trying to make this a regular habit. So every July for the last six years, I've been coming to the board asking for a public hearing in September. Hopefully seven times will make it a habit enough that people will start to gear themselves toward participating in that effort. Trying to stay away from the budget discussions, which obviously are important, but have a different set of balancing and priorities.
Hi. It's an excellent presentation.
Thank you.
The detail is, is quite helpful. And the opportunity for the public to weigh in on possible changes is important because they're the ones who live the experience every day. And have great ideas and giving them the opportunity is quite important. I have just a couple of questions. I noticed there are some buses where the seats lean back more than others. Including in the front, in other words, buses where the seats are actually leaning back. I'm wondering where they came from.
every one of our bus models has a different seat manufacturer where we came along with that, so there are variations between the different bus types. We used to have some buses that really leaned back. They were like sitting in an easy chair and leaned back. They were all retired several years ago. Yeah, the newest, which are manufactured by New Flyer, they have a little pillow cushion at the top of the seat, so you can kind of tell that they're new. And they may recline a little bit more than the
previous generation. These that I've seen them on a 42 with the L2 mats, they lean back quite a bit, particularly in the front.
Okay.
And I've noticed that seniors in particular, because they actually have to lean back and somewhat uncomfortably have difficulty pushing themselves up. You may just want to be aware that there's some newer buses out there and you may not want to buy those kinds of seats.
Well, we're just getting ready to award, to issue a request for proposals for the next 5 years worth of bus procurements. I'll be happy to share that observation with our bus engineering staff, because I always try to encourage them to get seats that are comfortable to meet.
How does a person who has no money
speak?
Care? and take it transport from one side to the other, then that person is strictly prohibited to, from boarding bus.
Oh, that's a large subject, which is maybe more than I have time, but the issue of fare evasion and collecting that which is due us is a top priority for the general manager, and we're working to try and find ways to make sure that people consider us like any other service, something we pay for.
All right, next question comes from Dorothy's portion.
Hi.
Thank you.
I have a question about the standing room. Could you be a little more specific about details when the DC Circle would take over? Would the timing be the same? You know, because it's here to redirect and replace all kinds of centers.
Once a local operator takes over a Metro bus line, then it's up to them to set the schedule. And so right now there's a circulator route that runs from Navy Yard to Congress Heights, and they started 3 years ago, and we've seen the ridership on the 94 decrease significantly because of the alternative transportation that's available. And so we recognize that it does nobody good service to have two poorly performing services rather than picking one that would allow for the best frequency and the best coordination and management of that service. And so this is a joint discussion between the District Department of Transportation and Metro. And so I think the intention is that it would be at least as good as what the Route 94 schedule is, perhaps better because it is under the circulator brand and may have a commitment to running more frequency than is justified exclusively by the ridership.
Will you have public hearings on that?
Well, we'll have one formal public hearing, but we will be out on the route passing out information and asking people to take surveys and come online to exchange their opinion. And if any community group, such as the Ward 8 Transportation Task Force, wants us to come and talk at them about the changes, we'd be happy to do that.
Because I'm concerned because there's a lot of development over in that area. So.
Yes.
Just one plus if they go to the circulator, that's a 50% fare reduction. Getting ready to get into the car,
that is parked in front of the bus stop, and they drive past, and then I'll be late because I have to wait for the next bus to come. So is there any way where that bus stop can be moved maybe on the corner versus in front of those people's houses?
I don't know offhand why that stop is located, but 6200 Addison Road, I'm happy to have my staff go take a look at it to see if we can put it in a more standard location.
Okay.
Thank you for the comment.
Okay, Gino. Yes, thank you. Actually, just a week or so ago, the Washington Post published an article with a drawing of what the new design for the First Street entrance will be, First Street entrance to Union Station. And when that happened, a neighbor whose son went to Gonzaga High School, as I did go to Gonzaga High School, his son has been, he's graduating now, when he was attending the school, he had to use a walker. And the father actually had to accompany his son to get into Union Station. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to go over it with him, and I'd like to do it with him or his son at the station. So I can't explain precisely what difficulties occur. But so if I could defer the discussion to that happens.
What happens when you go down that slide, the doors that lead into the metro, there are steps you have to go down. And they're not powered doors either. They're very heavy doors. So anyone that's in any sort of mobility device, ranging from a scooter to a wheelchair to on crutches to a cane, is a very difficult entrance to the metro. Going that way. I used to try to go that way and then subsequently changed it. I know coming out to the station where they do have a ramp that they can go up. But that particular entrance we've been talking about ever since I've been on this committee. Yeah, it's saying why can't we have a ramp at that point so that the wheelchairs can get down?
You mean at the Massachusetts Avenue?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of crowd that usually someone will open the door for you, but you still have to do that steps. So that's a real problem.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Sammy, thank you very much for your briefing.
It's my pleasure. I look forward to hearing from all of you and look forward to reporting back this fall. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll have the public comment period.
Mr. Chair, we only have one person for public comment. I think that was Ms. Robinson. Okay, so she already made her comment.
Well, you're upset about the adjournment, but I got good luck in getting new people to show themselves. We really went through a great fit. And could you, Tino, starting with you? Okay, just reintroduce yourself and may your involvement, I guess, is the was here what county and so forth.
Well, I'm Tino Palladio, a new member of the Municipal Council. I didn't get the gist of your statement. What did you want me to do on identifying this?
Well, the basically, yeah, you said you're with Arlington County.
Montgomery County.
Montgomery?
Montgomery County.
Okay.
I'm Herb Traeger, excuse me, Herb, welcome to your ear. I have been through the Braddock Road, this is an update from last week and last month, too. So far today, I've been through the Braddock Road Metro Station 3 times, and the evening is not over yet. The problem with the Braddock Road Metro Station, as you may recall, is it's sinking. if you're in low availability, you can't get into some of the cards at some places on the platform because of the gap between the train and where the platform has sunk. On the inbound side, going towards DC, the lines are now painted. There are yellow lines with indications as to where people in mobility devices should board the train. On the outbound side, they have some yellow lines painted, but I couldn't see if they have the indications for boarding. But that's Metro's doing a very nice job resolving the issue at Redwood Road. And so it's nice to come to a meeting and have nice things to say. Thank you.
I'm not in the friendly area. I'm not really sure. I've only been here 3 years. I'm at the State Department. That's where my business is located. But I'm fielding some questions from some of my customers there, and they're basically kind of trying to wrap their head around the changes that's going on with Metro. A couple of them work closely with Metro Access, and they're not happy people. But I guess it's part of my responsibility and this board's responsibility to see if we can meet somewhere in the middle to iron out some of those issues. I know there's things going on, but the more I read, the more I learn, the more I expect to be a very active member.
Hello, I'm Anthony Over. Here we go. Does that work?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Anthony Oberg. I'm a new member from Arlington County. I work in Falls Church for a disability consulting firm, basically, to do government contracts. And I'm here to represent my area, corner of the world for this community.
Thank you. Let me move for adjournment of this section. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?